always enjoy getting Pat's take on pretty much anything. And right now, with the things that have blown up, in my opinion, and I may be, Pat may regard me as a dinosaur here, but with what's going on in college football, I've never seen this many bombs hit a sport like all of a sudden has hit college football, basketball, college athletics, football in particular. I think the ruling on the NIL is a path to disaster, to be honest with you. People have tried to interpret best case scenario out of the court ruling. But if you really take a look at it, it's open Pandora's box for God knows what else with attorneys and agents and so on. And they're going to get involved. I don't think they're not. The portal, transfer portal, that's just foreign to me. How you can do that now? You can even do it within conference and not miss a year. More association with gambling than they've had in the past. And now the 12-team playoff scenario that is being proposed, I just have a hard time with that one as well. But they can exist with that, and they can exist with some of the other. But I don't know about this NIL. I'm not saying it'll go away, but Pat, I'm saying it's going to have a detrimental influence on a game that very few people realize out of over 1,100 teams in intercollegiate athletics, only 25 are in the black. Only 25 schools are profitable. Now, how are you going to tag this other on them? I don't know. But at any rate, your thoughts and your feelings.
Well, here's the bottom line. I mean, whatever your opinion, what my opinion, what anybody's opinion is about it, doesn't mean anything, because it's all coming, and it's all coming at us fast. It's the biggest stories that we've ever seen in the sport. I mean, we thought it was a big deal when we saw teams switching conferences, you know, when Missouri came to the SEC and when Nebraska went to the Big Ten. That story pales in comparison with all the stuff that's going on right now. The Supreme Court thing, look, the NCAA has been acting as a monopoly for years, and they pretty much, in the end, what happened was the NCAA just didn't address things they should have addressed, and they finally said, look, you can't keep doing it, things like this. You can't operate the way you've been operating. It's not the right way. So we'll see on that. But, I mean, there's so many different things to discuss. You know, the NIL, we'll see how it all works out. I still think they're going to make the states are going to end up having to do it for every state. And they're all going to be different rules. And that's going to be interesting, whether it's a disaster or not. But, you know, the thing is, I keep telling myself, because Congress has no business getting in the middle. This Nancy DeBlase got too little ability to be able to do anything. I keep asking myself, they're still going to put 11 guys on the field at a time. You know, there's going to be a lot of ancillary things going on, but it's still just going to be a football game, and somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose. We're going to keep scoring. I don't think it's going to be as big a deal in terms of people watching the sport. And I think that the biggest reason that they did go to this 12-team playoff is because football is already losing popularity even before COVID. So fewer fans are going to the game, so they've got to figure out a way to make money. And the best way to make money for each school is to expand the playoffs and possibly triple the amount of money the TV's bringing in.
I said, yeah, there's no doubt about what Pat was saying about the 12-team playoff scenario is chase the money. There's no doubt about that at all. It's just amazing to me, though, that I mean, this game was never intended for a revenue stream for athletes who agreed to go to a school and play football. It's amazing to me that when people don't even give any credit for college education, paid for room, board, food, pencils, paper, laptop, you name it, whatever you need. But that doesn't even ring a bell. Fact is, if you talk to a lot of young people, they laugh at you for even suggesting that. Now, I think the bottom line is this. I don't think the players make the game itself. The game itself is made as a part and parcel of the university, of the college, of the people who organize and put it into place. I think you could put legitimate student-athletes out on the field and not a whole heck of a lot of people, and keep the bands and the cheerleaders and all of the fireworks that go along traditions with college football, and a whole heck of a lot of fans wouldn't know the difference and still would be excited about it. So at any rate, I just have a problem with student-athletes, if you want to call them that, want to get rich off playing college football.
But they won't, Kay. I mean, there'll be a guy here and a guy there that'll make some money. We still don't know how they're going to do it. It's not like the left guard is going to be making a lot of money or any money. It's not like the softball players are going to make any money. I can't think of anybody on Florida's basketball team that would have made money last year, maybe Trey Mann. So it's just going to depend on how they handle this in those terms. And unfortunately, they've received no guidance from the NCAA and no guidance from Congress. So it's up to the states, you know. But, I mean, if you did say, hey, look, we're not going to do this anymore, and the only people that can play, we're going to allow to play football are people who will sign away their rights to make money, then you're going to end up with an inferior product. It's just not going to be as good. And then what happens? You start losing games, and then you go, hey, we need to get better players. So you spend money. Think about this. You know, Florida had a recruiting dinner the other night over at Spurrier's. It's still not open completely, but they're open for dinners and stuff like that. They had a recruiting dinner. The bill was $12,000. So this is not money that everybody's spending money to make money. And that's just the way it's working right now.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. And I understand a lot of what's going on. I shouldn't say most, but a lot of what's going on. An awful lot of it I don't truly understand. And under the heading of being honest about what's going on, I don't know if you saw it recently, if you watched any of the NFL channel, they do The Life Of, and they had one on Dickinson. And he was talking about his $5,000 checks and so on when he was being recruited to go to college, and his new car, new Trans Am, and he gave that up after a year because he got a new Corvette. You know, it's just, it's all, I know this has been going on. But at any rate, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I know it's a big deal with college football, and something's got to give one way or the other. Let's jump to the scene at Florida, and I want to ask you about the looks like Florida State. Word I'm getting is they really picked up a quality quarterback coming in up there.
I'm sorry, who picked up the quarterback?
Florida State coming in. It'll be a freshman.
Yeah, well, I mean, they need one, that's for sure. You know, it is. We found out last year, and I think this is where college football is going is that you can't, like, you used to be able to win without a great quarterback. You can't do that anymore. It's over. That's, the rules have all been changed and made so that you've got to have good quarterback play to have any chance. And we saw it last year, you know, with all these guys getting drafted so high, you know, and certainly with Kyle Trask. You have to have good quarterbacks. Now, I think defenses will be better this year, but they're not going to catch up. There's still going to be this ability for quarterbacks to make things happen. So I think that's one reason you're seeing a lot of teams stack up their quarterback room, and then they'll figure out who the best one is, and then they'll go from there. And you know, the rest of them will jump in the transfer portal. So it's almost gotten to a point now where somebody gets a recruit, and you go, okay, we'll see how long he's there. Maybe a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 4 years. In a perfect world, he's there 3 years and goes pro. But it's just kind of hard to get too into who's going where right now, because we're even seeing some schools, and this isn't going to be the Power Five schools in terms of the elites aren't going to do this, but some schools are doing nothing but recruiting from the portal. They're not even bothered to recruit high school things. That, to me, is the most alarming thing of all, because these guys are going to have to, you know, not going to be able to sign with in some cases, Power Five schools. They're going to have to sign with Group of Five or even lower, and then hope that they're good enough that they get to eventually transfer in to those better schools. So that is a bigger concern to me than anything.
Yeah, you're right. I'm concerned as well about the transfer portal. I'm just shocked that they got that through about transfer within the conference now, and you don't have to sit out a year. And that could open up some real problems. I think, again, you know, going back, I've talked to you about this before, but and hearing a number of people chat about it and questions I've gotten, I don't think people are giving Georgia enough credit, Pat. I think, you know, the five top teams last year rated, the top five teams rated nationally, all five lost their quarterback and they're having another quarterback turnover or quarterback turnover. Georgia is not. Georgia's got JT Daniel. He's been there. He's been in some major college football before. He's got some credentials. And what I hear is they like him an awful lot. He's going to have an advantage. Georgia has, I think, their attrition rate was not what other people suffered, and they've got a lot of people coming back. They've got some momentum going. I really think Georgia's sitting in the catbird seat, especially with Florida having to do what they've got to do to get a restart down there, I think. And it looks pretty strong for Georgia.
Well, it does, and I still think the jury's out on JT Daniels, because what he did last year was very, at the end of the year, when they didn't have a chance to win the division and they were against pretty bad teams, you know, they didn't really play against really good teams, except for Cincinnati. He did pretty well against Cincinnati's defense. This is still a guy that got beat out at Southern Cal. That's why he left. And I want to see what he does in a regular, you know, a full season. The other thing is they open with Clemson. And, you know, that, in a, if this was the playoff, the 12-team playoffs, I would feel one way about it. You know, then I would say, oh, yeah, well, you can lose that game, no big deal. But now if you lose that game, it's going to be hard to keep going forward. And especially, you know, the way it works out, and especially if Florida ends up being pretty good. But the one thing that the biggest thing advantage to me for Georgia, as good as I think they have good players, I think their quarterback might be pretty good, but we still don't know. The biggest advantage is who they play from the other side. You know, they play Arkansas and Auburn. Auburn with a brand new coach, a lot of transition, guys leaving, new coaches coming in, and that is the best team. You know, Arkansas has got to find a new quarterback after Felipe Franks. They play those two teams. Florida plays Alabama and LSU. Well, I mean, that is an unbelievable advantage that they have, and this happens every once in a while with the scheduling. And I'm hoping that what they do, and I don't know if they will in the SEC, that eventually when we go to this 12-team playoff, as we get rid of divisions and we just go, hey, look, the two best teams are going to play for it, and that's going to be fine with me. And then you don't see this automatic advantage of a team that's based on who they play from the other side. You would, in my opinion, you would just, in fact, I think it'd be great if they just, your schedule is based on where you finished the year before, you know, kind of like the NFL does. You know, the NFL is very, very socialistic, you know, with the draft and the scheduling and sharing of money, whereas I think it's in college football, it's a little more capitalist, where the rich, whoever's the richest is going to have the best situation. So, and the rich keep getting richer and richer and richer. So they're kind of it's kind of weird the way they're different. I don't know that we can do anything about it, but I think getting it to a point where we don't have divisions anymore. And I think that's coming. I don't know that it's coming in the SEC, but I think it's coming, for example, in the Pac-12. I think you're going to see that for sure.
Those are great points, Pat. Excellent points. In fact, few, if any, have really talked about or thought about that, and about the teams that may be eligible. Because if you look at right now, if you ask 80% of the people, I think would say if we projected who might be in the playoffs, the four teams, they're going to pick Alabama, Clemson, probably Ohio State, and Notre Dame, and Georgia. But they're going to be within, if they pick six, they're probably going to hit the four. And that's a fact. I think you're right on about the scheduling. Listen, Pat, I appreciate your time. Sorry about lamenting as I did earlier on. But I wanted to get your opinion. Our listeners, I'm sure, are appreciative of that. And I won't keep you no longer. We'd like to have you back on before the season, though. There are quite a few other things I'd like to chat with you about.
Sure, anytime.